So all morning long, our Congressman John Larson from the 1st District, former Connecticut Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner Carl Bard, and also Chip Beckett, Chairman of Glastonbury Town Council, also with CROG. And we are now on Facebook. If people want to tune in, they can also go to our Talk of Connecticut Facebook page, which is facebook.com/talkofct. We're talking about what is going to be done with I-84 and I-91. Something has to be done.
Soon.
Which path do we follow? And, Carl, I want to talk a bit about your role with CROG, how they view what needs to be done. How about filling our audience in on that, Carl?
Well, CROG is the Capital Region Council of Governments, and it's the chief elected officials of all 38 towns, which goes from Mansfield to Southington, Enfield down to Glastonbury and Rocky Hill. And so we talk about things that are of regional significance, because things that are beyond our town control, and I think one of the important things to remember is 80% of us live, sleep, work, and recreate in a different town. So it's not very few people stay inside their town to live their life. They go to work somewhere else, they go to the movies in a third town, and they sleep somewhere. So I think it's very important to realize we're a very integrated metropolitan area. And we're one of the most car-dependent metropolitan areas in the country, which is why we have this problem, because everybody has, they talk about four cars for a household, everybody's got their car driving somewhere else. And we only have a couple of highways that really have turned into the major north, south, east, west roads, and so everybody's trying to get on those. And I had a meeting with DOT, and they were talking about there's two through lanes, and there's two accidents a day. So two through lanes becomes one or zero through lanes twice a day, which is why you get the backups in Hartford in all directions.
I meant to call you. I called you, Carl. I apologize. Chip, of course. All the names floating around in my mind. But, Chip, so, I mean, what in Glastonbury, what would this do for Glastonbury, let's say?
Well, I think what it does for Glastonbury is we have a lot of people that work up at the Dayhill Road area with insurance companies, so they avoid the bottle deck across the Bulkley Bridge. You know, a common thing is to get off of Governor Street, go around to Connecticut Boulevard, and get back on the highway, so you avoid the backup on Route 2 that can extend a mile or better on the 84 merge. It also gives maybe better access. I know I'm a veterinarian for horses. I'll go to Southington and walk it a lot from Glastonbury. I have no intention of doing anything in downtown Hartford, but if the roads lead there, then you have to go through downtown Hartford. Why is my big truck in the middle of commuting time? You know, because I have an emergency someplace else. So I think there's a lot of back-and-forth interchange that doesn't involve the city, but all the traffic has to go through the city right now.
Would you say we're at a crisis situation?
We're going to be there soon.
There you go.
That's it.
That's why we're here this morning.
Okay, let's go to the calls, Brad. Beth in Windsor. Good morning, Beth.
Beth, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm from Windsor. I'm a native, and I'm an elderly lady. I just have a general statement. I'm all for whatever they can do to revitalize Hartford. But tell Mr. Larson to go back to the nation's capital, grab his fellow Democrat, Blumenthal, I have in mind, stop concentrating on voting no on anything the Republicans do and on trying to impeach the president. Let's all work together for the good of the United States of America. The people are fed up with nation's news. I watch TV, but I don't pay any attention to the mainstream press. The Democrats have got to work with the Republicans.
Okay, thank you. We're not on that subject this
morning.
This
is one area where Democrats and Republicans are working
this
together.
This is one area.
And this is, and it's only going to continue. And we hope that the cooperation can continue because, the listener's frustration is held by a lot of Americans. They want to see something get done. They're tired of the back and forth where, it's a taste great, less filling argument that goes on incessantly, and no solutions are being put forward, and therefore nothing is getting done.
How did you get involved with the gentleman that you've brought to Connecticut?
Bill Schuster?
Yes.
How well, I knew his dad first through Jack Murtha, who used to be in what we call the Pennsylvania Corner. And Bud Schuster was innovative with respect to transportation issues. And Bill followed him to the Congress. So I got to know him early on before he was the chairman of the committee. But he's risen very quickly within the committee. And because we worked on projects together, and he's actually been to the bocce tournament on at least half a dozen times, Brad. But we had him up here when Jim Oberstar was the Democratic ranking chairman to talk about what we could do for the region. I've always been focused on 91, and especially because we had the Coltsville and National Historic Park and an eight-lane highway that separated that from the Connecticut River, two levees that we've talked about earlier that are in desperate need of repair. And how would we do this? And Bill, early on, kept on talking about we need a massive infrastructure program in order to do this. And now, you know, to President Trump's credit, he's talking about a $1 trillion investment. You heard David Lightman earlier saying, well, the money's got to be real. We've got to put out real proposals. And as we've been acknowledging all throughout the program, everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to die.
Right.
You know, and so this is a great project and great vision, but we've got to come up with the means to pay for it. And you've got to, that's why Tony Guerrero was smart, I think, and why you have both been advocates of tolling, you know, which will ultimately pay for these things over time. And when the project like this can pay for itself out of what amounts to a user fee, and you can generate a tax system that people will say, okay, that's fair, I understand where the money's going, you can produce results. And that's what Bill Schuster's been all about. So we've been able to work very well together on that, and we're going to make another push this fall to try to get this massive infrastructure bill done.
Wow. Okay, callers, hang in there. We'll get to you. But in a Bard, we're taking phone calls. We're also on our Facebook page live, facebook.com/talkofct. If you want to ask a question that way in regards to the I-94, I-91 proposal, a solution for the capital city, let's go to Matt in New Hartford. Matt, good morning.
Hello there, Brad and Dan and your guests. How are you?
Great.
Good. I'm driving right through in New Hartford. Hey, I just wanted to comment about the lockbox. I'm not against this project. Actually, I think there's some good in it, especially the fact that they won't have to plow the roads. But the lockbox, I have a grave concern with, because Malloy and the legislators for years have violated the public trust. And I give you an example. Years ago, when a young man was killed in a bus accident going to school or on a field trip, there was an outcry for seatbelts on school buses. And there was a special fund created for a lockbox to have seatbelts put on school buses to protect what I consider our most precious is our kids. And yet every single year, they have taken the money out of that and they have put it into the general fund. There isn't a seatbelt on any school bus right now, and there are some people that say, well, the kids won't buckle it up. Well, you know what? You just make sure that the seatbelt is connected to a monitor, so if a kid unhooks it, a light goes off, and the bus doesn't continue until they do. And then they would all wear it. So that's why I believe that the lockbox is not secure because of that violation of public trust.
All right, it's a credibility thing, Congressman.
Well, there's a difference between what the state proposes and what the federal government proposes. And in this case, as you heard Tony Guerrero say earlier, they don't get the money. And so that's the ultimate punishment. If the money is not used specifically for construction purposes, then they don't get that money
from the federal government. Yeah.
And they get, and let's be honest, they get 80% of that money would come from the federal government. And there's other means for us to get revenue as well in the state's difficult time, but that's why we took a whole crew down to Washington D.C. to meet with the Build America division of the Department of Transportation. Carl was talking earlier about the constructability of all of this, and I think we should spend some time on this because it does make all the sense in the world, and he's an expert.
I'm an expert because 30 years ago, as Brad and I were talking earlier, I participated in the Hartford Area Expressway program where we rebuilt the 8491 interchange at that time. And one of the critical issues then, as is now, is exactly how do you maintain traffic service through the area while you're actually building the project. And unfortunately, the corridor is built out completely. So the alternatives you're looking at primarily are splitting the corridor in half, building one half of it, coming back, and then building the other half. So you'll have, at the very best, a very reduced capacity through the city through that period. And you're probably talking something on the order of 3 to 4 years. One of the alternatives being kicked around also is to just shut 84 down for the duration of the project and let the contractor go in there and build it as fast as they can. And I can tell you from my perspective, having worked for the MDC for so many years, and we're just working on local streets, and you see the effect of the construction on the businesses involved, and it's pretty dramatic. And in some cases, they're hanging on by their teeth. So you can imagine, you know, in all deference to the big companies, it's the small businesses that tend to take the biggest hit. So that's something you have to keep in mind while you're making your selection as far as your solution. But the great thing about the tunnels is, as the congressman pointed out, it goes under the city, you build the tunnel, and at the very end, you connect it. So your actual impact to traffic is reduced, I mean, levels of magnitude. I can't even begin to estimate at this point. But that's a critical piece of the conversation that needs to be brought out.
You know, Congressman Larson, your idea is a winner. There's no question. If you look at the pluses, and everybody I remember when it was happening in Massachusetts, it was the worst thing that ever happened. It was this, it was that, and now all of a sudden,
you're talking about the big dig.
I'm talking about the big dig. Now all of a sudden, things are happening in Massachusetts, in Boston. So I mean, this is exactly what you're talking about.
And Tip O'Neill didn't live to see it, but he believed in it because
he
saw the vision. Brad, I think that's an important point here, is that ultimately, and what I so appreciate about you and Dan doing this, is that are we going to start talking about solutions, or are we just going to put our head in the sand and go on endlessly complaining about the way things are, instead of trying to roll up our sleeves across the aisle and come up with a solution? Here's an opportunity to roll up our sleeves across the aisle and come up with a solution. The Connecticut General Assembly has already taken a small step. Clearly, there is the will down in Washington, D.C. The president is proposing this. Now I think it's just a matter of us getting together and doing a lot of the legwork and overcoming a lot of skepticism that exists out there. But at the end of the day, from my perspective, how could I, in good conscience, go to the United States Congress and vote on a project that I know will only incrementally make a short-term change that would shut down the city of Hartford, that would leave it divided, and would still do nothing about the damage that's ongoing to our levees? That would be governmental malpractice, not standing up for what you knew had to be done during the time. And yes, that can be painful, but you got to be willing to take the heat and say, this is a solution. Let's roll up our sleeves and get it done. And the more that people learn about it, and that's the great public service that you're doing, that Chip is doing on CROG and the Glastonbury Council, and that Carl has done by going out to these forums. We've had several already, and we're going to continue to expand them. But you know what? Everyone that's heard it, I said, you know what? We believe in this. We're going to follow through on this. So I can't thank you enough for doing that.
Yeah, Chip, go ahead.
You know, I think the other thing to remember is the tragedy of the Mayanus River Bridge. Connecticut went through a similar thing where they hadn't done any maintenance for a long time. And when I first started practicing and came back, they were working on all the highways, and there was jobs, and unemployment was about 2%, and if you could walk and talk, you could get a job as a laborer in construction, and those guys are the ones that are still doing construction today. But we haven't added a new generation in a long, long time. So I think the economic benefits would be huge and probably pay for itself just in economic activity.
No, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Congressman, I'm trying to get this focused in my mind. I'm on I-91 South, and I want to go to East Hartford. Right now it's like driving the Indy 500. I've got to make that left quickly on I-84 East, then I've got to get off. And would that change that? Would this project change that?
Well, yes, on several fronts. Well, first of all, you would now have, if you're coming from the south, depending how far south you are, if you're below the Putnam Bridge, you could take the Putnam Bridge and come up Route 2 into East Hartford. If you currently could go over the Charter Oak, but you see, and Carl mentioned earlier how that project has got to be reworked already. If you were going, if you were at south of 91 and going to Bradley, you would end up in a tunnel that would take you directly to Bradley. If you were going to 84, you could get in that tunnel and come out at Robert Street, which would be dramatic, and then you would be on your way to Boston. You know, you would just go over Sunset Ridge, and you're already on route to Boston. It's a more direct alignment. Carl and Chuck Sheehan were showing me old pictures of the original design that DOT had of where 84 should line up.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, because we're coming up on news. But
we want that. We want that. That's exactly what we're looking for. We'll be back. 8:30.
Will take place underground to have the city remain undisturbed. Now, we have to keep the viaduct currently in repair because, like so many, so much infrastructure today is in a crumbling state. But nonetheless, we then ultimately will repurpose those three bridges across the from East Hartford to Hartford, the Charter Oak, the Buckley, and the Founders Bridge. And I believe ultimately we'll have to go to Glastonbury and also improve the Putnam Bridge access coming into Hartford, which would come in and swing over, and you'd be able to get into the tunnel and directly up to Bradley if that was your...
You know, when you think of this, Dan, just the way he... But really.
Okay, so now let's presume this project is not undertaken, but we realize something has to be done. What's the price tag on alternatives?
Well, here's the thing, and you heard Carl address this early on. What we're talking about, what they're currently studying now, that they have got to come to the federal government and ask for the money to do it, is the viaduct alternative. That's $4.7 to $5 billion. That only takes you up to a certain point of 84. Then the next point, connecting to the Buckley Bridge, and then a massive redo of the largest stone arch bridge in the world, and an attempt to change the capacity on that, and then fix the blockage that happens in East Hartford around that bridge as well. That's estimated to be in pieces another $2 and then another $3 billion. So you're talking $10 billion. Here's the difference. If you were to go through with that, and it will incrementally improve the area, and there's some great ideas that they have come up with here for the city of Hartford, including moving the train station, which could also be done under what we envision. But nonetheless, there's some good ideas there. But incrementally, we will spend $10 billion. The city will still be divided. We will not be connected to the riverfront, and we haven't solved the levee problem, which, as we said at the outset of the show, is a more crucial problem than anything else that we face. It's just that it doesn't team up all the time. It's not in front of everyone, but believe me, for 8 years, more than 8 years, we've had the Army Corps out there, and as Carl pointed out at the beginning, the sand piping, the sand boil, as it's called, is real, and it has to be addressed. This gives us an opportunity to address both those and come up with a 100-year solution for both sides of the river and the entire region.
And that levee is included in the price tag under your plan.
Exactly.
Wow.
See, that's huge.
Well, it'll...
Well, not to mention, you're not upsetting like you said, the city of Hartford as this project is being undertaken, whereas alternatives would upset the city of Hartford as far as traffic on I-84 or I-91 into the city.
How long?
That's why Carl went through the construction part of it in terms of what they would have to close down.
How long, Congressman, how long? Here we are discussing this morning. How long would it be before we could get started? We've got to do something. How long would it be?
Well, in other words, it has to be, like you said, let's presume the Congress, Trump, you've got the transportation plan, you've got the money, so now you've got to go to them with a plan. How long would it take to get that plan in place so that when the government says, we've got the money, you say, well, we should be at the top of the list because our plan is ready? How long would that take?
Well, that's what DOT is currently working on. They have to provide, like with any federal project, and Carl can address this better than I, we use the term, you have to be there with your bags packed. In other words, the state has to say, this is our top priority. Here's what we're going to do. Currently, they are working on the viaduct proposal, but they also are working on the interchange proposal. What we're suggesting is they're inextricably linked and tied to one another. So by doing that, what we're doing is trying to fast-track this initiative, get out to the public, and there still is a lot of, just by law, that the DOT will have to do in terms of public hearings and public forums. But once there is buy-in, then you can go get the federal money because your Department of Transportation has indicated that this is their number one project, that this is what they have indicated that they need to see. And that's what will determine its process within the federal government.
So, Chip, Carl, I see you shaking your head. And DOT, public hearings, what are we looking at as far as a time frame? What needs to be done to get DOT on board for this plan, Carl?
All right, I'm going to have to go through a little bit of the process just so you understand where we are now and where we'd like to be. You're in the essentially the preliminary engineering phase on the interchange portion. That has been completed for the viaduct, so they're actually into the next step is the environmental document. And as the Congressman pointed out, what we'd like to do is meld this because really, as we said early on, if you're going to spend that much money, you really should look at it as a global solution. With that, I think when you get through with the environmental process, you're going to find some very interesting points of discussion, which we've touched on, environmental justice, wetlands, clean water, et cetera, that the tunnels are going to be the most viable of the group. With that said, say you're out maybe 2 years, then you go into the design phase, and I'm thinking you've got to figure at least 3 years for the design phase before you can create your contract documents. When that's done, you want the money in place so you can move, because the way the money is doled out, you get some to do your preliminary engineering, basically, and you get some to, at your end of preliminary design, you set your scope and you've done your alternative analysis, you move in design, and then you have your contract documents, at which they give you another chunk of money, and that's for the construction portion. So, you know, roughly speaking, say you're 5 years out for that, and then as far as the construction goes, the tunnels themselves are probably, I would think, a couple of years apiece. And the nice thing about it, if you wanted to, you could probably drill them both at the same time.
Wow.
Chip, is
so we can do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's as I used to say, and you might remember this, when I would testify at the legislature, I always used to say they harassed us about, you know, whatever the particular project was in the DOT. I said, look, we're just a bunch of civil engineers. We'll build anything you like. We don't care. But the fact is we have the resources to design something like this easily.
Great.
Chip,
fabulous.
Is CROG doing anything in order to get the DOT on board?
We haven't done anything formally at this point. We've talked about it at our executive committee. We've been trying to get Carl to come talk to the policy board to explain in all the details, and schedules haven't worked out, but we're working on getting that completed. I think people are intrigued by the idea, but nervous, because I think there's been so much negativism and our lack of investment over the years. The people say, how are you going to get the money? You know, it's not possible. It's pie in the sky. But the thing that, and the reason I came is I think we need to invest, that I think people forget about. Investments are essential. Things wear out. The population has grown. The demands have grown. And we need to be where the ball is going to be in the future, not where it was 30 or 40 years ago.
You know, this is interesting. People, obviously, and they should be concerned about the price tag, but are they not concerned about the price tag for the alternate plans that are out there? I mean, there's a price tag that goes along with that, too, and it's a considerable price tag.
Well, I think the biggest alternative is we can have dirt roads and not go anywhere. Well, seriously, you know, the viaduct falls down and you can't get from here to Waterbury, you know, that's going to be a big deal. Right. And I think at some point people have to say, all this has a lifespan and we have to make
it. It's already been a big deal trying to get to Waterbury. It's already been a big deal.
Listen, it's a big deal trying to get to East Hartford.
You got it. You got it. And this is what I mean. This is why we wanted to sit down at least for the first time, and I hope we can sit down again and go to other areas of our state to do these broadcasts.
Now, Chip, you mentioned that the crowd seems interested by this. Congressman, you mentioned how you and Carl and others have gone around and presented your plan. What is that reaction when the plan is presented?
I've yet to be any. There's always been a lot of interesting questions. The biggest question is, how are you going to fund this? And if there isn't a federal plan to fund this, the governor and DOT are correct that the track record of the federal government, which is, you've heard the skepticism on part of your listeners, but that's also true of the various agencies. Having said that, either there's going to be a federal program or there's not. I believe that there is. And if we're not prepared with a long-term vision, if we are only prepared to come with the incrementalism that the state has followed in the past, then that's probably what we'll get. I think that that would be governmental malpractice given what
Hold
we
that
face.
Thought. Hold that
We kind of threw them a curveball here. This is not like, we don't want it to sound like they, you know, as Carl said, look, they're engineers. They can pretty much design anything. And I think given the opportunity in some of the slides, and we should bring them in, what they've shown in terms of the city and what it will look like and how this will transform the region, we didn't do them. The Department of Transportation did. I mean, they have that kind of talent and that kind of ability there. I would rather see us invested long-term in making those kinds of visions than just kicking the can down the road for another 15 years and not solving a problem of a divided city and reconnecting us to our riverfront.
And that being second-guessed, why didn't they do it right the first time?
That's right.
Well, here's
That's
the chance
right.
to do it right the first time.
Exactly.
Thank you, Congressman. Thank you, everybody. And Dan's got an hour to go. I just want to thank you and say this is just the first of several programs like this. Till we meet tomorrow morning, the good Lord willing, you remember, be good to yourself. You couldn't do it for a better person. WDRC AM, WDRC.